podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Uncovered. I am Jared Kimber. He is Bayram Kazi. You can follow him at Def Mango. You can follow me around the streets if you can find me. We are going to be talking about the cricket this week, as we always do Uncovered, and I suppose as we always do all the time on everything I do. This is a cricket channel, as far as I'm aware. I was at the Ireland test, and so it was a weird atmosphere because the last time I went to an Ireland-England test, everyone expected Ireland to get smashed in the face. And of course, Ireland start that test match with, you know, one of the more bizarre beginnings to a test match we'll ever see. So everyone gets really, really excited. And even as over time, England quite clearly worked their way back into that game, I don't think there was ever a feeling of, wow, they shouldn't be here or anything else. Whereas this time, the whole thing was so bizarre because they started the test match by basically Andy Balburnie saying the quiet bit out loud, which is, we don't really prepare for red ball cricket that much anymore. Is also remarkable to say, because they've actually played more test matches in the last, you know, few months than they've ever played in their entire run. But he was honest, and he said, we don't really prepare for it. The major tournament is obviously the World Cup. We've got this weird test match in the middle before we head off to Zimbabwe for qualifiers. The whole thing was really, really weird. But they also unquestionably got the worst of the conditions, right? Like Graham Hume bowling 124 kilometer an hour outswingers would have done a lot better if they'd won the toss and been bowling at the start rather than later on. But it did feel a little bit flat maybe compared to some of the other Ireland test matches that I've seen. That's my third one I've been to. Obviously watched a couple on TV as well. But I remember, I think it was Nasser Hussain who said that the difference between, you know, the top teams and the lower teams has never been wider. And I was thinking, but Ireland, it didn't even exist. Like, if you really want to be honest, Ireland's a lot closer to England now than they were 20 years ago. So it was a weird way of thinking about it. The fact that Adair and McBrien made runs, I think at the very least allowed Ireland to get out of it with, their trousers around their waist rather than around their ankles.
Yeah, I think they did salvage a bit of pride over there when Adair and McBrien scored those runs towards the end and got a 300-plus score. And I think you put it nicely when you said they had the worst of the conditions, because winning the toss would have helped, right?
And they may still have lost. Definitely still would have lost. We're not saying that they would have won, but they would have had the better of the conditions, so they might have looked better.
Absolutely. And if they had bowled to England first, maybe if they got them out at a sub-200 score or something like that, they would have dared to dream or hope like they did last time. And I think also a little bit of lack of experience in that lineup this time around. You know, Kevin O'Brien isn't around anymore. He was a big part of Ireland's initial few test matches, particularly the one against Pakistan, their debut test. He scored a ton and they nearly won that one as well, by the way, after having been imposed to follow on.
Well, this time they didn't follow on, but it was very similar, right? In that the game was gone and that's when they made the runs and came back. The difference was that they were never going to get 150 in front or 200 in front and make England nervous, which is exactly what happened in Malahide in that first game against Pakistan.
Yeah. And then they had a few debutants, of course. Finn Hand, I believe, debuted, and also his maiden wicket was almost a fumble, caught and bowled, and then he got a hand to it, right? So the irony is not lost over there. But I think they missed some senior seamers, like maybe Timmy Murtagh would have fared well, you know, especially if they had bowled first. And also, I would just have Josh Little in there. The left arm angle would have helped, even if, you know, he doesn't have all of that red ball experience. Who does have so much red ball experience anyway?
It wasn't about experience. It was, they didn't pick him essentially because he's being rested for the World Cup qualifiers, right? And look, I think it would have been unfair to think that if Josh Little plays, Ireland are in a much better position in this game.
That's fair.
Having said that, he's probably going to be their best red ball bowler. So, that whether he is now or not, I don't know, but you probably want him to play at Lords as much as possible. So yeah, I do think not having Little and Tim Murtagh is still playing right for Middlesex. Yeah. And so
absolutely not too far away from the Lords, actually at Lords.
He's the expert. Right? He was the one who took the wickets in.
Why not have him in the squad?
Yeah. So, you know, his retirement caused the problem. Obviously, I did think about this because a lot of people were saying it was a poor bowling attack. And look, I get it. Andy McBrien is, you know, not quite on the level of, you know, he's close to being a test match spinner, but he's not on the level of, you know, most of the other off spinners we see regularly in the world, you know, Mahdi Hasan and Nathan Lyon and Ashwin. Obviously, he's nowhere near those kinds of levels. But if you really do, what's the best way of putting it? But you could make a very, very solid argument that their two best seamers, one was retired and one was being rested. And Mark Adair is such a fascinating cricketer to me. I spent a lot of time talking to the Irish media this week, and they were sort of saying, Mark Adair's not very good. I said, well, Mark Adair's best ball is about as good as anyone's best ball in world cricket. When he bowls a really good ball, it's like, because he's got good pace and his movement is insane. The problem is that his next ball is quite often his worst ball, right? Mm. And for a guy who is a swing bowler who can swing the ball both in and away, right, who's very skillful, he's not very accurate. And he bowls a lot of bad balls and he got punished early on. And if you had Little and you just said to Little, okay, you know, Graham Hume hasn't worked here and Mark Adair's got smashed a little bit. We just need you to come in and just bowl back of the length for a couple of overs and just settle us down. That's a big difference between that and Fionn Hand, right? Who, as you said, was that his second or third first class game? I don't think he's played a lot.
Something like that.
I'm not sure he's a specialist bowler, if we're being completely honest. I think he's probably a very good fifth bowler, you know, but they didn't have a choice, right? That was what they were left with. And I thought their batting probably underperformed. I thought their bowling was just completely, just not good enough overall.
Yeah, I mean, they also, I feel, lacked an enforcer, right? Someone like Boyd Rankin would have been good in this Irish test team.
All of the retired players they used to have would have been really good here. I mean, I made that joke during the test on our Discord channel where I said, basically, if you had Little, Boyd Rankin and Tim Murtagh, with this batting lineup and Andy McBrien bowling a little bit off spin and Curtis Kampfer, you'd be thinking, well, that's not a bad attack. It may not win you a test, but it'll keep you in it. And then you look at this attack and you're like, I mean, Graham Hume, I think he's got a bowling average of like 18 in or 19 in first class cricket over the first 5 years of his career. And on Crick Info, it lists him as fast medium, right? No one who's seen him bowl now is thinking he's fast medium. There's a time when I thought Ben Duckett was facing him and he could have stopped, looked down and plucked the ball out with his hand and just thrown it back. You know, when you're when you're a kid bowling to like a senior player in the nets and they're just like, I'm not even going to face that. Sorry, that's not quality.
He's a big stocky fellow, so he might intimidate you with the looks. I mean, there's that possibility.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of muscle on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a bit on England, you know, Josh Tung debuted and they have a bit of a crisis. We'll get to the injury crisis, but Josh Tung has been included for the first two tests in the Ashes now. You saw him live. He took a fifer on debut in the second innings. What do you make of him?
Yeah, I remember seeing Josh Tung maybe 2018, 2019. And I saw one of his games and I thought, he's got a windmill action. Do you know what I mean when I say windmill action? Does everyone know? No, so windmill action, it's not, there aren't many of them left in cricket. So it's not something you talk about, but something like someone like Sohail Tanveer, where it's almost like both of their arms are moving in a similar direction at the same time. Liam Plunkett had a little bit of a windmill action, maybe slightly more traditional, but Josh Tung has that. And then he has this thing where he like falls over and almost bowls across himself like that. It's a dramatic bowling action from that kind of point of view. And it was funny because during the test, I went down to Beckenham to talk to Manus Labuschagne. And, you know, I sort of said, you faced Josh Tung before. It's a bit of a weird action. Is he hard to pick up? Because James McCullum was not picking him up at all. There were when Tung was bowling full, James McCullum wasn't seeing the ball. Some of his shots were so bizarre. And I said to Manus, does he have a weird action? And Manus said, for him, it was a bit like facing Scott Boland, which I thought was remarkable because they're nothing like each other the way that we think about cricket. But when you break it down, you do understand what Manus was saying. They both basically bowl from a slight angle coming in at you at all times. I thought he bowled well and he took wickets. And I think he'd been averaging over 40 in first-class cricket coming in to in this year. So from that perspective, I thought England obviously saw something in him. But if they think he's going to be an enforcer against against better batters, I just don't see that happening. The fact that Andy McBrien and Mark Adair didn't really worry too much about the short ball, I think tells you that he's just not quite quick enough to bowl that role. Mm-hmm. And I've seen England do this before where they pick someone to come in and bowl the short stuff who just isn't that fast. And I worry for two reasons. One, I just think that's not surely not what he does in first-class cricket, right? Mm-hmm. And the second thing I worry about is, that's how you injure bowlers who are not used to it, right? If you're Neil Wagner and that's like your raison d'etre, I think it's fine. I thought because of the angle that he comes in on, you know, this weird, because he bowls quite close to the stumps, but the ball still comes from wider. I do think that he could have success against players who haven't seen much of him before. He got up to 91 miles an hour at one stage, but he was mostly around 86, 87 miles an hour. I don't think he's quite at the level they want to be Mark Wood, Ollie Stones, or Joff Archer's backup.
But you meant Ollie Robinson, didn't you? You messed up your Ollies again.
No, I meant Ollie Stone that time. Oh, that you did time mean I was Ollie right. Stone. Yeah. So what I meant is he's not, those are the guys who are in the side to be quick because they're quick.
Right.
They're all quicker than him, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that he's not quite at their pace. Mm-hmm. We saw that with Mahmood as well when they brought Mahmood in. And you're just like, yeah, he's quick for first class cricket, but he's not quite quick for test cricket. And mm-hmm. I think that Josh Tung is very similar. Oh, by the way, I was calling Josh Tung Gavin Tung for the first half of the test match because there was a Gavin Tung who played for the West Indies. And I'm the only person who remembers Gavin Tung as well. Anyway, I don't think he's quite the player they were hoping he would be, which is maybe that little bit quicker. Weirdly enough, the stuff that I don't think they brought him into the side for, which was the ball movement, the unorthodox way he releases the ball, all these sorts of things, I actually thought it might hold up. But yeah, I don't know where my current depth chart of English seamers are, but I wouldn't have him in my top 10 of English seamers. But with all the injuries and the sorts of people they're trying to replace, maybe they want that kind of thing. We have seen them. We saw it in New Zealand. And we've seen it over and over again. If Ben Stokes can't come in and bowl bouncers and they don't have someone else in the team to do that, it's actually a big part of their tactics. Mm. Think back to Jasprit Bumrah's world record over and all those sorts of things. So the way they come into test matches really does need someone who can just bowl bouncer after bouncer, especially to the lower order. Tung did that, but I didn't think he did it in a way. I mean, Mark Adair's probably in the best batting form of his life. And obviously, you know, no one's a bigger fan of Andy McBrien's batting than I am. But the fact that they look so comfortable against it doesn't make me feel that comfortable going ahead with Josh Tung as a quick bowler, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if the Aussies get to face him, they might be licking their lips, pun intended. But anyway, some positives for England as well, of course. Brodie picked up a fifer, which is fairly staple in the English summer. And then Pope got a double. Duckett nearly got a double. Crawley and Root got runs. Do you think that this was good practice before the Ashes, particularly given that now they are very, very depleted going into this Ashes?
Yeah, they are. I mean, we'll talk about that later. It's really, really interesting. But I think it's a competitive game. So unless they were going to play their A side, I wonder how they would have got, you know, any warm up for the Ashes properly. You know, this is probably better than them all going back to county cricket. I think it's probably a better warm up for their bowlers than it is for their batters, only from a point of view of, and their bowlers may not play in the Ashes, of course, which is a bit weird, but only from the point of view that Lorcan Tucker and Harry Tector, I mean, usually I would add Andy Balburnie, but he barely batted in this test match. Paul Sterling, Curtis Kampfer, you know, you have to get them out. Not always in this case, but they're good batters. You know, there's high quality skill there. I think the bowlers, like Graham Hume, is not warming up Ben Duckett or Ollie Pope. But Mark, as I said, Mark Adair's best ball is very, very good. But and Andy McBrien is at least another off spinner like Nathan Lyon. So there's some stuff there. So I don't think it was a terrible warm up, but it's also probably not. Perhaps if they had Josh Little, you know, even that one extra bowler, it's slightly different. Right. And then they have the ability to put a little bit more pressure on it. From an England perspective, it actually would have been far better if they'd lost the toss. They batted when the ball was moving around a little bit everywhere. And they had the chance to go, you know, to bat from a position of weakness, right? Rather than a position of strength. But look, it's really interesting. I've done a couple of podcasts with Nathan Johns about whether Ireland should have played this test altogether with the World Cup qualifiers coming up, which is a really interesting topic. That's the point that we are in cricket, where you're now like, should we be playing this test match at Lord's? Lorcan Tucker, I thought, was really, really interesting. And as you said, you know, Brodie taking his wickets and a couple of the batters making runs. I don't think it's ever a negative for Duckett and Pope to make runs at Lord's, you know, in a test
Crawley
match.
To get tons of runs on the inside edge. There's that as well.
Yeah. oh my God. The amount of times that he got an inside edge. I've never seen him do that often before. Like usually he's the outside edge king. That is something worth looking at going forward. Cause I did honestly wonder if that's what was going on. If he was trying to cover the outside edge and he started getting inside edges. But that's for another day. But yeah, look, it's disappointing for Ireland, I think. But they fought back and probably saved some face. They got to play in packed Lords over a couple of days. It didn't rain. There was a lot of, you know, good things from that perspective. But we're going to take a break. Remember, we've probably got a few topics today. But if you have a super chat and you are desperate for us to answer it, please put it down or put it in the comments or whatever the super chat thing is. We're going to take a quick break here. And then after the break, we will be back. We'll be talking a little bit about the World Test Championship final.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Welcome back to Uncovered, Jared and Bayram. Let's talk World Test Championship Final. If you're listening to this on a podcast, you've already heard me and Bayram go through it a little bit. But that was mostly me answering Bayram's questions. So I might as well ask him some questions. You're a little bit fascinated with the fact that Saha is not over there. So I went through it today. So Saha, I'm trying to remember if he didn't help them win a test, but there was a test against New Zealand that they got themselves in a little bit of trouble with. They ended up drawing that test. They got New Zealand 9 wickets down. Saha made 60. So he's had success with the bat in this cycle. He obviously, they're probably going to go with Bharat, is my guess. And most of the 11s I've seen have Bharat's name there. I think we actually even had a comment from someone asking about Ishan Kishan. And is this it?
Let me check.
Gamma says, is it better to have an attacking batter like Kishan over a proper wicketkeeper like KS Bharat to strengthen the batting? What do you think is a better option? So a lot of people are talking about this. Just on that particular question, I'll answer this before I throw it to you, is they both average 38 in first-class cricket. It's really interesting that they are seen as two different kinds of player, Ishan Kishan and KS Bharat, when their records would suggest they're a little bit more similar to that. We know that Ishan is obviously a lot more attacking. You like the idea of Saha coming in. That's partly because we know what Saha can do, right? And you're thinking it's a final. You're better off to have a player like that in a final than Bharat, who's only played a couple of tests, and Ishan, who hasn't played any, has he?
Yeah, I don't think he has. He has not earned his Indian test cap yet, from what I recall. You can probably check that whilst I answer this.
You talk, and I'll make sure that I'm right. I'm pretty sure we're right. Yeah, hasn't played.
Yeah, I'm quite sure as well. Yeah, there you have it. And I think where that selection call probably comes from is that Rishabh Pant was an attacking player. So, hey, let's try to do a like for like over here. But it doesn't work in my head, at least, because Ishan Kishan plays in the top order in limited overs cricket. And he hasn't quite cemented a place in that team either. So to throw him in a World Test Championship final, that sounds absurd to me. Because had they included Saha and Bharat as the two options and then gone for Bharat, I would have been fine with that. I would be like, okay, they probably trust him more. They have the coaching staff has eyes on these players, and they probably feel that KS Bharat is more prepared to, you know, face this challenge. But with Rithim and Saha, you get tons of experience. I cannot recall how many test matches he has played, but he's played a lot of test matches. This is a one-off game. It's not a series. You don't have to hand him out a central contract or tie him down for like the future or anything. You can use his services right now and then look towards the future. And why I thought that, you know, he could be a very, very valuable inclusion is because India haven't been very good in finals, have they, in the last 10 years? They have struggled big time. And in these sorts of occasions, that experience matters. Those nerves matter. It might be a situation where they have to grind, you know, a session out or something.
Well, and just on Saha in finals, in two IPL finals, he's made 100 and a 50. And those were the two IPL finals he lost. So you might want him in the team, but you probably want him in to fail rather than succeed.
Yeah, no bad juju over there, I suppose. But he clearly has been in the system for a long time, and he has had more exposure than KS Bharat. And I think exposure counts for something at this level. And I think he is the best keeper out of these three. And one mistake could cost you big time on these sorts of occasions and these sorts of games.
Yeah.
And India want to get over that hoodoo, right? They lost the World Test Championship final last time. They're in it again this time. And if we look at the past 2 years, they are arguably the best test side in terms of numbers. I think barring that series versus South Africa, in which Kohli started screaming at the stumps, they haven't really lost a test series, have they? So they really need to win this. And with Virat Kohli, at least when he was captain, there was a very, very strong focus on Test cricket. You know, you would hear this all the time that we want to give Test cricket the most importance. It is the pinnacle of the sport. So just keeping all of that in mind, I think this might be an occasion too big for KS Bharat. I'm not doubting his ability. I think that might have helped with having Saha in the team, particularly because you're without Bumrah and Pant, who have been your two main match winners in the past. But then again, you know, this is India and Rahane is back for the experience. Maybe he can make up for Saha's, perhaps. Maybe that's a solution to this.
That's where I think it's interesting, because Rahane, I know form is part of the reason he's back, obviously. Mm-hmm. He started making runs in the Ranji Trophy and a couple of double hundreds and a 190-odd, and he's made runs everywhere else, including the IPL. So he clearly looks like he's in more form than we've seen in a while. But the one thing I would say is that if they were willing to bring him back as an experienced player, then Saha would make sense. I don't think it bothers me as much as it bothers you, but one thing I would say on your, you know, to go along with your point is that I'm pretty sure the ECB did a study. I think someone else in cricket might have done a study as well on the experience levels of World Cup winning teams. And it generally is that the more experienced you are, the more likely you are to win a World Cup, which is, I think, sometimes why teams turn up at World Cups with very, very old players. And everyone's like, why are they bringing these guys? But it's because of that. You know, this guy's played 25 high-pressure games and 150 one-dayers. And yes, they might average five less than their replacement, but we know exactly what we're going to get from them in a big game, we assume. You know, all those sorts of things do play a part. So I do find that interesting. The other big interesting part of this is the oval pitch itself. Mm. So it does have, as far as English wickets go, it does certainly have a reputation of being a spin-friendly wicket. And,
Yasir Shah got a 10 for.
Yasir Shah got a 10 for. I'm trying to think if Jadeja took wickets when India won. I think he might have as well. But the thing is that the majority, and, you know, we've seen Graham Swann do very well there at times. Yeah. You know, we've seen overseas spinners sometimes come in and do well. But those test matches are usually played in August and sometimes even September. It's early June. It's not just June. It's early June. And I do wonder, I think Kartikeya wrote a piece today, you know, and this, I've been thinking this myself. And a lot of people have asked me, but I'll tell you why this is specifically hard to answer from a data point of view. But we were wondering if the reason that the oval spins a lot is probably just it gets used a lot as a pitch. And by the end of the year, it gets a little bit more tired and a little bit more dusty. Because I've been to a lot of early season matches where the seam bowlers have dominated at the oval. It's probably the first class venue I've seen the most cricket at in the world. And yes, spinners can do very well there, but I've seen them do very well towards the end of the year. I remember Murali Kartik and Gareth Batty bowling. They were both basically unplayable when I think it was, I'm trying to remember if they won the county championship that year, or maybe they got promoted. I can't remember what it was, but they were unplayable on that surface. Though, you know, two test quality spinners, absolutely unplayable. But I've seen plenty of other times where spinners have looked very benign on that wicket. Mm. And the reason that it's hard to work out is specifically because in first-class cricket, you usually get an extra day of the pitch degrading, which means that spinners come into all surfaces in a way in test cricket, which they don't always come into in first-class cricket, especially in places like England and New Zealand. So, you know, if you're in New Zealand domestic cricket, you probably don't always, or traditionally anyway, you probably didn't always need a spinner. Whereas New Zealand test cricket, you probably do because you need to rest everyone a little bit longer and the pitch will degrade that little bit more. This is what's interesting about this oval. We can go back and look at the stats of first class games in the oval in June, and I'm sure someone will. I thought about it and then I thought I'd rather not. But and the reason I thought rather not is because we're going to be looking at 4-day games. Right. And it is a slightly different thing. You know, the extra 20% is a massive change of how you prepare a pitch, what happens, how many people run on the pitch, right, throughout the game. All those things do change. And so we really don't know how this will go from that perspective. And also the other thing is it's a neutral, right? So we don't know if the groundskeeper might be thinking, wow, I want to keep both teams interested here. Maybe I'll give a little bit of extra pace and bounce, keep a little bit of extra pace and bounce, but then I'm going to have it on days 3, 4, and 5 where the spinners come back in to see if, you know, they want to play Jadeja and Ashwin. It's such an unknown variable. It's really fascinating to me.
I think as far as the curators are concerned, they would be focused on getting a result, you know, because it's a final.
Well, they've
and
got
that
6 days, don't they?
Yeah, that they have as well.
So maybe they don't have to focus as much on a result as you normally would. But I do get your point.
Yeah. Well, I saw a picture that Dinesh Karthik retweeted or posted, and it was off the oval surface that will be used. And that is as grassy and green a track as you'll ever see. So definitely a bowl first wicket. And where this will get interesting is that prior to actually looking at a picture of that, you know, surface, I thought that India will go for two spinners. I thought they will use Jadeja for the balance that he provides in the team, and Ashwin because of his experience. And last time Ashwin toured England, he got wickets as well. That is an important little, you know, bit of information in this that India will be looking at. And then you've got seamers, right? You've got Siraj and Shami who are definitely going to play. And then you were going to think about maybe Umesh or Unadkat, who I did not see playing. But Umesh was probably the more, you know, rational sort of player that they were, or bowler that they were going to go for. But now, after looking at that wicket, I think they might not play Jadeja. They might play Shardul Thakur ahead of Jadeja. And that might just mess
Jadeja.
Things up.
Surely they'll play Jadeja for the batting.
Yeah, they should. I mean, let's see. Maybe they go for
Ashwin. I can't imagine Jadeja's not playing. He should be first name on the team sheet. I mean, Ashwin is the, is, you know, the way that that goes. But no, I mean, I understand
it's
what you're saying. I'm having a look at the picture that Dinesh Karthik put up. It is quite green. What I would say is this. Wendy sent this 2 hours ago. So, yeah, okay. We've got a little while before. I've seen so many pictures of test match grounds 2 days before where the pitch looks bright green. Everyone gets really freaked out and worried. And then by the time the game actually starts, the pitch looks okay. And if you do look at that pitch, there are little patches of brown underneath the grass. Mm. So perhaps when it's shaved, perhaps when it dies off, when it's rolled or whatever, it won't be as much. So what I would say is, if I was involved with Indian cricket, and Rahul Dravid would know this, he doesn't need, I'm sure he's listening, obviously, but he'll know this, that you can't overreact to what it looks like at the moment. But yeah, no, the Indian lineup is really interesting because Australia don't really have a choice, right? They maybe have a choice between Nisa and Boland.
That's the only choice they have, I think.
And I don't think
every other position is locked down.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a choice. I think Boland will just play ahead of Nisa just because he's played more test cricket and taken more wickets and is more like Josh Hazlewood. But they don't really have any choices where India, and I've said this before, I think India are actually really, really fascinating from this point of view is because of Jadeja, and you can even throw Ashwin and Shardul and Akshar, you know, because of the all-round ability of some of those players, they have such flexibility in their lineup, which means that you have the ability to be so, to get things so correct. The problem with that, of course, also comes in on the other side, which is if you make a mistake by making too many changes, everyone's going to absolutely have a go at you. There's almost like you either win the game or you make a change and everyone will focus in on that change, despite the fact that may not be why you lost the game. So it is quite interesting from that point of view. Any other thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think what India would be focusing on in this game in particular is that they don't want to lose this game in half an hour. They've done that twice in their last two finals, or well, semi-finals in the 29 World Cup versus New Zealand. And then also the test match versus New Zealand 2 years back. I think they lost both of those games in very short period of time, you know? Like, they could have made a fist out of it. And they did make a fist out of it, you know? Especially in the World Cup semi. But it's just that that flurry of wickets cost them and they really would not want that. And I think they have the players to do this, you know? Rohit Sharma has an impeccable record in England. Shubman Gill is young, but he's sprightly and he'll be eager to get runs. Pujara has been playing in England for nearly 1.5, 2 years and he's been captaining Sussex. And I think his experience in this test match will be absolutely imperative. Kohli, not in the best of form, but of course, he's still Kohli. So they have the players for this, right? But they just can't let that half an hour or hour of play cost them the game again, because it is an issue with India. Their bilateral record is great, but when it comes to tournaments for the last decade, they haven't won anything. 2013 Champions Trophy is the last time we saw them lift a trophy. So this is big in Indian cricket. And this test championship matters a lot. To Virat Kohli, this will matter a whole lot, I think, more than other players, because he's just been so vocal about his love and support for Test cricket. So,
if you think about Virat at the moment, his legacy outside of his batting is RCB and India not winning when he was either in charge or the main person, right?
Yeah.
That's sometimes that just happens. That is not necessarily down to, oh, Virat Kohli's terrible or Virat Kohli's great. And, you know, I've explained his captaincy many times before, but it doesn't matter. That's not how narratives work, right?
Maybe him and AB bond over that.
Yeah, narratives don't. Well, AB's a perfect example. Chris Gayle is another example, right? Chris Gayle won 2 World Cups and people still thought of him as a failure, right? These things happen. The only other thing I was going to say is I've just done huge, I've gone through India's entire World Test Championship cycle. I've gone through Australia's as well. There'll be pieces up on that, you know, in the next 24 hours or so. The one thing I noticed going through India's was how rarely they had very big partnerships in this period. So they had a couple of hundreds. KL Rahul hit a couple of very important hundreds. Rohit Sharma hit a couple of very important hundreds. Rishabh Pant made 100 that almost won them a test in South Africa. Hundreds weren't a problem, right? They came. It was very rare to see their top order have partnerships together of over 100, 150 runs. So even when they made 400, 450, 500 in some cases, there was a lot of like smaller scores. It wasn't like one guy made 100 and the other guy made 250 or anything like that. That is, I think, where, when you were talking about before, them losing wickets in clusters, that what they have been doing over a long period of time is consistently losing wickets. And I do think that that is an issue. And it's also something, specifically an issue against a team that I think Australia, I think this is right, if every Australian bowler, including Cam Green, in the World Test Championship cycle, had a bowling average under 30. So Cam Green's was 29. I'm trying to remember someone. Boland's was obviously minus 4. So they're wicket takers, right? And that's going to be a really, and whether this pitch is as green as it is or not, I think I looked it up the other day, and the average so far at the Oval this year has been 30 runs per wicket. Quite low, not massive, not like scary low, but low. Generally at the Oval, the average is 32 runs per wicket, right? So that is a bit of a drop this year. And that's probably because it's the middle, it's usually July and August when batting becomes a little bit easier at the Oval. Specifically, you could say that about the whole country, but it seems to get, that surface seems to firm up even more. So no, it's lots of interesting stuff. And obviously next week, we'll probably just be talking about this game. So
I just think that with respect to India, they do have a good chance, but Australia's bowling attack is relentless, even without Hazelwood. You know, either of those guys play, Boland or Neeser. Neeser's been playing for Glamorgan, getting wickets, scoring runs, and Scotty Boland averages 13.5. So these guys aren't easy and they aren't going to give India a lot of space to breathe. And I think that if I look at this objectively, I know I said in a podcast yesterday that India are going to get 35 all out and Scotty Boland is going to get a 7 for, but if I'm being serious about this, I would still think that Australia are favourites to win it. But this matters a lot to India, particularly for Kohli and Sharma, because their legacy kind of depends on it, you know? And this is going to be a massive win if they pull this off. And they've done it before. Depleted India have defeated full strength Australia in Australia. So just a few facts over there. Obviously stoked for the game. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what lineup India plays, because Australia is pretty much ironed out. And Cam Green, I think, is someone who provides impeccable balance to Australia, which really helps them, you know, as far as the team compositions are concerned.
So just on the bookies have Australia as massive favourites now, even when Hazelwood came out. It's worth putting that out there as well, just so that everyone has it. I'm not sure I have them as massive favourites, but I certainly think Australia is the better team. And I think the injuries are going to affect India a lot more than they will Australia. We're on Uncovered. I'm Jared. He's Bayram. Here's a break. Welcome back to Uncovered. Jared and Bayram here. Jack Leach is back. Do you know the way I just pronounced that sounded wrong, because I said Jack Leach is back as if he's making a comeback, whereas actually what I mean, he's injured. Before we talk about his injury, have you ever heard of a man called Doug Ackley?
I have not.
I think it's Ackley or Ackley. I think it's Ackley. He's an Australian who is absolutely convinced that the front foot no ball law is the reason that bowlers get bad backs. That under the back foot no ball law, people didn't get backs because the same amount of pressure wasn't through the crease. And I kind of, from a physics perspective, agree with him. There are some things I don't necessarily agree with. Like, I think when we bowled the back foot no ball, we were bowling a lot slower. So the pressure generally wasn't as big in that point of view. And the other thing was, in the old days, they would say, he's got a sore back. And now we scan it and some, you know, MRI imaging type, you know, tomfoolery tells us that there's a fracture there, right? So I do think there are other issues beyond that, but his basic point is, so Jack Leach has a stress fracture to his back. He's out for the entire Ashes, probably for the rest of the year, I would think, depending on, I haven't heard an update since the first one yesterday, but I would assume he's out for a good period of time. It's very, very rare that finger spinners get this injury. It happens to wrist spinners a little bit. Obviously happens to seamers a lot. Daniel Vettori was one, and that was Doug that pointed that out to me on Twitter as well. But just such a setback for Jack Leach. I just feel like his whole career is like overcoming things. You know, he wasn't exactly the sexiest player. You know, Moeen Ali was the person they were desperate to get in the team, not Jack Leach. You know, he plays for Somerset, which I don't know. I don't know what percentage of English cricket fans could find Somerset on a map. Although it's one of the cricket heartlands of England, weirdly enough. Crohn's disease.
Well, I mean, Viv played for Somerset, no?
Yeah. Even Viv doesn't know where it is. Crohn's disease, obviously, was, you know, something else he had to overcome. He got really sick. He got sepsis. They think he was one of the earlier people that had COVID. There's this theory, and it might just be English cricketers whispering, that they all had COVID, but they were all sick in South Africa in 2019-2020 series. Mm-hmm. They now think the reason they were sick was that they had COVID and didn't know that it was COVID at the time, of course. But the whole team got sick. They lost the test match against South Africa, basically, because they couldn't put out an 11 properly. You know, he then had that period where he was traveling around as like professional 12th, just not even doing anything. He had to watch Dom Best play over him. I mean, it's incredible. Dom Best was playing ahead of Jack Leach, and Dom Best is now averaging high 40s in first class cricket over the last couple of years. Probably doesn't have a great future ahead of him, near future, unless something changes in his career. Leach just feels like all these things happen to him. And I would say since Bazball, he clearly changed his technique a little bit. I don't know who it was who worked with him, but he puts a little bit more action on the ball to get some drift, which means that you can't just smash him early on. Like, people used to just treat him like he was a net bowler for the first couple of innings until the ball started spinning. You can't do that anymore. He's actually quite a clever bowler now on flat pitches in a way that he never was before. He finally gets to that point in his career and he gets a stress fracture. It just feels like there's, no matter what Jack Leach does, something just drags him back into the muck.
Yeah, there are a few angles to this, right? I think the part where you mentioned where he's changed his technique a bit, he was very useful on the flat pitches of Pakistan.
Yeah.
And I think he had a pretty good tour. Even in this previous test match versus Ireland, I mean, he was tempting Sterling to sweep him. And then, well, Johnny Bairstow had an earful to say from behind the stumps. But yeah, he would get you those wickets which would often break partnerships. And Jack Leach was just a useful control bowler to have who can now also, you know, get a wicket or two at times. And I think he brought a lot of value to England's team. And if I look at England's spinners after Graham Swann and maybe Monty, you know, there aren't a lot of names which would match Leach's achievements. You've got the Zafar Ansaris who are now studying or practicing law, and other players like Dom Best. I mean, he was introduced in the test team, had a little bit of success with the bat, actually, I think more than the ball. And yeah, he's completely out of the picture. Who else have you got? You've got Rehan. Rehan Emmett could come in potentially.
I mean, Moeen Ali is the big one, right? So, you know, and there you have someone who, he's such a weird career on his own because he took really good wickets, but went at a ridiculously high run rate. And so when you talk about Leach getting to become someone who can take wickets and control the run rate, he probably is the first one to be able to do that since Swan. So even Moeen Ali couldn't necessarily do that. So yeah, I mean, they have struggled. You know, who have they used? They've used people like Kerrigan, Scott Borthwick. I'm missing another one as well.
With a leggy maybe, because I can't think of another.
Parkinson came in.
Parkinson, I would love.
Liam Dawson.
Liam Dawson is someone who could really fill that gap well. I think in his last championship game, he got like a 6-for in an inning.
Did he?
And he can provide good value with the bat as well. So he might be one of those guys England might be looking at.
I think that's what they'll do. I think they'll go Will Jacks, Liam Dawson, someone like that. Even Rehan Ahmed, if they, you know,
I wouldn't mind Rehan at all. Yeah. I think he does have what it takes and he is going to be, you know, the next Adil Rashid someday. He looks to be keen, you know, when it comes to playing across formats. He's a good batter as well. Liam Dawson makes the most sense, I suppose. And I've thought about this, right? Because he has that experience. He's won a World Cup on the bench. And I mean, you know, it's just going to be unfortunate overall not having Jack Leach, not just because, of course, all of the challenges that he's gone through with the injuries, the sepsis, Crohn's disease, but also because the last time Australia came to England, he won England a test match. He was there with Ben Stokes right till the end, bagged a Specsavers deal. I think his specs are free for life now. And that's just a great anecdote. And I think that he really, you know, that was the point in his career that he started to believe, because you often talk to Jack Leach. It seems like he was one of those guys who never thought he'd take 100 test wickets. But now he had gotten to that point where he did believe. And that's why he is such a big blow to England. And yeah, I guess Dawson makes the most sense just because of like the profile that he brings.
Yeah, but I think Will Jacks is the other one, isn't he? So Will Jacks, did he play in Pakistan?
So Will Jacks never ever got a fifer in red ball cricket before he toured Pakistan. Weirdly enough, Pakistan gave him a fifer. But I think he is more of a batting option as opposed to a bowling option.
No, he definitely is. But I think because they have Joe Root, I think they might just think to look, to be honest, Dawson's a batter in professional cricket.
Yeah.
It's just that when he plays for England, he gets used as a bowler. So it probably depends on what you want. Dawson being the left arm finger spinner means that then they've got Root to bowl off spin as well to the left handers if they want. But the other way they might look at it is there's already a bunch of left handers in the Australian team. You might as well have two off spinners is a potential the way they go about that. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see which direction they go. But I think they'll pick the extra batter because I don't really think any spinner they can pick is going to take enough wickets to change it with their wickets. They really want 15 overs to rest all their seamers, especially with Ben Stokes. You know, it'd be interesting to see if Sam Curran plays a bigger part now as well because of that, you know, and he comes in and adds a little bit of extra batting and everything else as well. So be interested to see how they rejiggle that. Afghanistan are playing Sri Lanka. Tell me, what do I need to know? I know it's happening, but that's all I know.
You need to know, for starters, that Rashid Khan isn't a part of this series thus far. I'm not sure if he's set to come for the last ODI or not. The series is level 1-1. And without Rashid, Afghanistan first managed to restrict Sri Lanka to around 260-odd. And that, too, would have been fewer runs had it not been for Charitha Salanka, who scored 91. I think Dhananjaya scored a 50 in the lower order. So that's what got Sri Lanka to 268 or something. And then Afghanistan just came out and blew them away. They comfortably chased it down. And we know that Rehmat Shah has been getting runs for them at first drop, albeit not at a high strike rate, but he's been getting the runs for them. But what's most promising and the biggest takeaway, I think, for Afghanistan is that their opener, Ibrahim Zadran, who is 21 years of age, in 10 ODI games, has gotten 585 runs, which is the fifth most for any batter in ODI cricket after 10 games, which is amazing. I mean, this guy could go on to break Fakhar Zaman's record for quickest to 1,000 runs in ODI cricket. And he's gotten his 98 run a ball. So that's even more promising that he's not like eating up tons of deliveries. And I think what's super beneficial for Afghanistan is that they're getting to play in Hambantota, which might be a bit similar to what they'll, you know, experience in India. I'm not saying it'll be like completely similar, but it could be, you know, there's going to be lots of crossover. It's weird that they're playing all those three games in Hambantota. It's like Afghanistan are touring Hambantota and that's it. But Sri Lanka bounced back, of course. I mean, they scored heaps of runs, 320-odd, and their top order fired, you know, Nisanka scored runs. Karuna Ratne is playing ODI cricket. There's some news for you. Yeah. He scored a 50.
Didn't expect that to happen.
Yeah, I think Kusal Mendes also got some runs that game. Everyone pitched in. Dhananjaya got like wickets as well, got some runs as well. Afghanistan capitulated, 190-odd. So what I'm learning from this series is that there's not a lot that separates both sides, but also both of those games have been one-sided. So that really sets us up nicely for the final in Hambantota. And biggest takeaway for Afghanistan, apart from Ibrahim Zadran, of course, and the runs he's scoring, is that they got a win versus Sri Lanka at their backyard. Without Rashid Khan. They will have Rashid Khan in India. And that makes them all the more potent. So if Afghanistan can figure out a consistent way to get 270 to 80 odd in this World Cup, I would even expect them to win a match of three.
Yeah, I think that's always been their thing. They usually have good enough bowling to keep people interested and occasionally do really, really well. It's that ability to consistently make a par score. I don't think we need them to make an above par score because their bowling is so good. But if they can make par scores and then occasionally a below par score, they'll be able to defend as well. But that is their biggest issue at the moment as a team. And let's just finish off. You said you had some news about Shaheen.
Yeah. So this
took a big sniff then as if I'd said the wrong thing. Was that just between you and me? You just wanted to tell me something.
No. You can definitely talk about this. I was just, you know, talking to you about it earlier, and I'm completely happy to talk about it over here, is that there's a lot of discourse going on currently with respect to Shaheen Shafridi's workload, and for good reason as well. He got injured in the World Cup final. He was injured before that. He was rushed into the team. And even though he wasn't at 100%, he was operating at, 80, 85, he was one of the key players for Pakistan in that World Cup campaign. And had he not injured his knee, who knows? Who would? Yeah. Who knows, right?
It was a bit of a fluke injury as well, wasn't it? Yeah. He was fielding the ball, wasn't he?
It's unfortunate because earlier in the year, that same year, he got injured fielding in Sri Lanka in a test match and then injured his knee again whilst he was fielding and after completing that catch in the final versus England. And even, you know, like, with a foot that barely was working or whatever, he bowled a dot ball. So bowling, like, just taking a few prods. So I understand the concern that everyone's having with respect to Shaheen. But then if he's bowled 27 overs in 10 days and played, seven games or 70-20s in 10 days, which does sound a bit ridiculous. Yes, if you ask me, that is a bit of T20 overload. But Shaheen needs some practice for test cricket. Pakistan is set to tour Sri Lanka, and that is happening in July. So if he is not that sort of match fit where he has a lot of overs under his belt and is rearing to go, I think that's not beneficial either. So it's a catch-22 situation. And I think I would be more comfortable playing Shaheen right now just so he gets back into his rhythm, because he's not back to peak Shaheen yet. He's, of course, Shaheen, even when he's not peak Shaheen, is really good, but we know what peak Shaheen is capable of. So I would want him to find that rhythm in the Vitality Blast and then go and win Pakistan a couple of test matches in Sri Lanka. But the worrying part in all of this is that Shaheen is also penciled in to play the 100. And I'm not sure if that's a great idea in a World Cup year, because that's a lot of cricket.
It's interesting. I saw him bowl against Lancashire, and he, I think it was during the IPL final. It was raining so much that Sky just put on the Blast game for later, because I think they overlapped. He's not bowling particularly well. The ball wasn't coming out of his hand. So there is a part of me that thinks that, yes, it's a lot of cricket, and I can understand why people would be upset about that. But there is a part of me that thinks he probably just needs a couple more overs, a couple more deliveries to get back to whatever he's doing. He took 2 for 25 in the last game, and I think there was a game against Derbyshire where he bowled really well early on. I don't know how many overs he bowled in that.
Well, most importantly, he completely destroyed or obliterated Joss Butler's off bowl. That's his biggest accomplishment. Apart from his batting, of course, he's an all-rounder now. Clearly, he gets or scores a lot of sixes.
Yeah. He made 29 in one game and 17 in the other. I'm just having a look. He made runs against India in the World Cup.
He most recently made runs against New Zealand in an ODI, and then he also scored a six or something versus India in the World Cup.
Yeah, very, very one crucial hit, but six. I remember it was a very important hit. Yeah.
So, and for the Hawkalanders, he's scored runs plenty of times now. I think it's not even one of those things where you need to talk about it. But of course, he continues to add to his game, which is great for Shaheen. But ultimately, I get why people are worried. You want to wrap him in cotton wool because Shaheen the bowler is worth way more than Shaheen the anything else. Right? Even though he's getting better at batting, he's a brilliant fielder for fast bowlers. I think he is absolutely, you know, amazing. Puts his body on the line, which again, every time he does that, I think all Pakistanis, we have our hearts in our mouths. But again, like I said, catch 22 situation. I do agree that he needs a few more miles in those legs to, you know, play a test match. But what if he gets injured playing all of this T20?
It's a lot of cricket.
And he's penciled in to play a lot.
Yeah, no, that's sure. You say his bowling's worth more than anything else. That's a little bit unfair on his hair, because he could be a hair model, I think, going ahead. Just want to thank everyone in the comments. I'm not going to be able to get to them today, but thanks to Manav, Siddharth, Kumar, EGP, EKG, Punate. Who else we got? Kultura. Can't see that one. Tejaram, I think, as well. Gamma, Kushev, All Things Cinema Vodcast, Gamma. Yeah, all those different people. So thank you to everyone. If you do want to ask a question on one of these shows, the best way, of course, is Super Chat. If no other reason, then it makes it easier for me to find
there's
and
one,
actually put on the
There's
screen.
One really interesting question if you have 2 minutes on you. I just want to address this.
I have 30 seconds. You better answer it quickly. Yeah. What was the question?
If Warner fails in the Ashes, does he get a farewell test versus Pakistan?
No.
Okay.
I think it's possible that Warner is not playing for Australia by the end of the Ashes. And to be fair, he was really honest in the press conference. He was saying, look, I'm going to tell you where I want to play my last games. The selectors may not agree. So the T20 one's the most interesting one, because I would still say he is probably should be Australia's opener unless something massively changes. Jeff Lemon was saying to me, someone could have a big bash. And I was like, well, happy, a pretty good big bash to move David Warner out of the side. but that could happen as well. World Cup, ODI World Cup, I think is probably the only thing that I can't see any reason why he wouldn't play. But yeah, it's very possible he won't play against Pakistan. I think if he makes it home, because he makes so many runs at home, he'll be fine. But if he's not playing in the last couple of Ashes tests, I think that's probably it for David Warner as a test cricketer, would be my
guess. I think Stuart Broad can answer that question in a couple of weeks' time.
Did you see when Warner was asked about Stuart Broad and he said, well, we're playing India first, so you know we're a little bit more worried about that was Mahbub. He said that. A little bit more worried about India at the moment, and then we'll be worried about it if Stuart Broad gets picked. And I did think it was funny. In fact, I've got to go, so I won't go too deep into it. But it's quite interesting that one of the biggest talking points of this series is Warner versus Broad. And there is a possibility that neither of them play all the test matches in the Ashes. But maybe we'll save that for when the Ashes actually comes around.
Yeah.
But you can find Bayram on Twitter at Def Mango. You can find him over at Grassroots Cricket for everything else. Plus, he's here like all the time. But thank you to everyone. Remember, get the super chats in if you want to support us on Patreon. That is also another great way of doing it. But bye for now. And I will be back in a couple of days to do a wagon wheel. And we've got a footmarks coming up as well. But mostly it'll be World Test Championship stuff, of which we'll start tomorrow from on the not the test match, but the actually on this site. We'll see you again next time.
This show has an ad-free version via Patreon, and there are many other extras available there as well. There is a link to the show notes. The show is hosted by me, Jared Kimber. Bharat Sundaresan is my co-host. It is produced by Nick McCorriston. We also have a great production team from 42 with Rati Joshi on socials, Orajoti Senapayi, and Maida Akam producing podcasts, and Mukunda Bandreddy is the head of our YouTube account.